You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
We are on a vital threshold in human history. While our fragmented perspective of the world has brought us and our planet to the edge of catastrophic breakdown, the newly emerging holistic perception of the cosmic hologram and the essential unity of consciousness offers us a choice for the transformational breakthrough. We're beginning to accept the scientific and spiritual theory that everything in our perfect universe is connected. Our guest today says everything we call physical reality is literally made up of information. That statement leads us to inquire, what implications does this have for us in our everyday lives? We'll be exploring this question and more with our guest, Dr. Jude Kuravan. Jude Kuravan is a cosmologist, planetary healer, and futurist. She has a master's degree in physics from Oxford University and a doctorate in archaeology. She's traveled the world and worked with wisdom keepers from many traditions and continues to pursue her lifelong passion in researching the nature of reality. She's the author of many books, including The Cosmic Hologram, Information at the Center of Creation. Join us for the next hour as we explore the nature of reality and the theory of informational physics with our guest, Dr. Jude Kuravan. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Jude, welcome.
Thank you, Justine. It's absolutely delightful to be with you.
Oh, it's my delight as well. Wow, wow. What a book. What a research you have gathered together in both spirit and science, in the spiritual realm and the science and bringing biology and all of it together. My goodness, it's a deep dive into the nature of reality as I've gone through your work here. And I would love for you to give us a little bit of a background going back to when you were at Oxford. And I remember reading about your being part of a discussion, a group discussion with the very, very famous physicists, Stephen Hawking and Roger Penrose. And you were out of that discussion, you were asked to write a paper. So can you give us a little bit of an overview and flavor of that?
Be delighted to. It was back in the early 70s, and I was an undergraduate. I was, I think, 19 years old at the time. And there was a wonderful teacher called Dennis Sharma, who'd been Stephen Hawking's mentor, and he became my mentor. And the black holes then, they'd been a sort of theoretical prediction of general relativity, but it was the time when it was being realised that they could actually be real phenomena. And so it was very exciting. So Stephen came to Oxford to give a postgraduate seminar, but I, thanks to Dennis invited me to be the youngest person in the room, essentially. And it was fascinating. And it just felt there was a rightness about what was being talked about. And I didn't realise it at the time, just how important black holes were going to be in our deeper understanding of our universe. And so in a way, you know, 40 years on or more, it's come full circle. But that day, it was fascinating. And then Dennis suggested that I write an essay on black holes for a university prize. And I did. And I won the prize.
Oh, yay! Yes. Still the youngest one in the room.
Still the youngest one in the room. But it was fascinating because I'd been sort of experiencing many different realms of reality since I was very young. And when I went to Oxford, the whole point really was to try and understand how my experiences in a much bigger understanding of reality sort of linked into what we call the physical world. And what I found at Oxford is actually, although the teaching was world class, it was very much of the paradigm that was then, which was 20th century science, of course. But I realised very soon that the scientific revolution of the 20th century was incomplete. And that was really validated for me in Oxford, because what I realised, even though I had such amazing opportunities, is that neither quantum physics nor relativity theory, those two twin pillars of 20th century science, not only did they seem incompatible, but they just didn't address the deeper nature of consciousness. And at the time, there was absolutely or virtually no understanding of the significance that we've now come to realise information plays. So it's wonderful. And as I say, black holes are a really important aspect of us understanding now. And it got me 25 quid because I won the prize.
You know, I'm thinking as you're talking about black holes and what we now know, we think of, as we look up in our local universe, as space as being empty, and because we only recognize light, you know, and the planets and the stars and things like that. And then when you, now we're discovering that it is filled, it is packed with energy and packed with things that, as you say, black holes that we can't even see. And so does this have something to do with the idea that all things are connected, that we are really not separated by this great empty space?
I think it's more profound than that. This understanding of this interconnectedness has been sort of creeping up into science more and more visibly over the last few years. But the reality of it is that for quantum theory, for quantum mechanics to work at all, there was a Northern Ireland scientist called John Stuart Bell, who said basically everything has to be interconnected at a non-local, in other words, beyond the sort of the limitations of the signalling of light, which has a limited speed limit. You know, nothing can go faster than the speed of light within space-time. But what he showed was, mathematically, that for quantum mechanics to work at all, our universe has to exist as a unified entity, non-locally connected. In other words, it has to know itself all the time. But within space-time, there is this still causality. So it's how do you bring those two together? And what I've been able to do in the cosmic hologram, but what science is now able to do, is to show how that works. And when you do it from this perspective, a profound, not just profound interconnectedness, it's deeper than that. It's saying that instead of the appearance of separation and the duality of how perhaps immaterial mind might emerge from our material brains, we have to go a much deeper dive than that, to go beyond energy and matter, to go beyond space-time, and to realise that they emerge as the appearance of our universe from this deeper perspective that is consciousness.
So are you saying instead of going from that idea of either or, this either or. It's either this way, relativity or quantum over here, either or. You're saying that there's a bigger picture that's both and and a bigger picture.
Yes.
Is that...
Very much. And that bigger picture enables their seeming incompatibility to be resolved. And at the same time, it doesn't just do that. It actually sets that bigger picture as a realization that instead of mind somehow arising from matter, that literally mind is matter, matter is mind, and consciousness isn't something we have. It literally is what we and the whole world are. And of course, some of those quantum physicists like Max Planck and others got this. They got this 100 years ago. Mystics have got it throughout the millennia. Ancient sages intuited and got it. People are actually talking black holes. John Archibald Wheeler, one of my heroes, who came up with the term black hole, got it. He said it from bit. In other words, all we call the itness of physical reality is made up of the bitness of universal information.
I know in your book you quote Max Planck, who's, you know, like a pillar of physics, and he's talking about, he says that I regard consciousness is fundamental.
Yes.
I regard matter as derivative of from consciousness. And so when you say mind is matter, wait a minute. Some of us were going to go, wait a minute, you can't touch, feel, you know, hear, taste mind.
Yes.
So we think of matter as something very solid. So how do we hold that if you say mind is matter or consciousness is fundamental and derivative of matter?
Well, as you just quoted Max Planck and many, many others, you know, understood that this is exactly the case. The appearance of physical reality seems pretty solid. We're sitting
at
a desk.
It does, definitely.
You know, I sort of give you a hug and it's lovely and it's very solid. But the thing is, we know as physicists, when we drill down to subatomic levels, what is left is essentially 99.999999999% no thingness. And what remains isn't like tiniest of billiard balls, it's excitations in fields of influence and relationships and dynamism. But not only is what we call physical reality incredibly ephemeral, the only reason we don't go through the floor we're standing or sitting on is the spin of those subatomic excitations work in such a way that they snag with each other. So they don't pass through each other. They work in such a way that they relate in such a way.
So they're in a relationship.
They're in a relationship. And that relationship gives that appearance of separation. But the other side of it is not only is what we call physical entities incredibly ephemeral, but that information, exactly the same digitized ones and zeros information that's the basis of all our technologies, that is working as we record this program. You know, our voices are being converted into digitized bits and then reassembled into voices. It's all information. The information, for example, you talk about, it seems very real, but have you ever had a virtual reality experience?
Yes.
You can taste it, you can see it, you can feel it. People get vertigo because they're in a VR that stands on the edge of a cliff. You know, it's as real as what we call true reality. Our holograms, we're getting to points now where we can create acoustic holograms and we can create holograms that you can actually touch as well as walk around and appear to. So all of that information that creates virtual realities, that creates holograms, that's all the basis of our technologies, is exactly the same as the universal information that's as real as anything we call physical reality.
Well, we'll go into that in more detail in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Jude Kurivan. She spells her last name C-U-R-R-I-V-A-N, Jude Kurivan, and her website, if you want to know more information, is wholeworld-view.org, wholeworld-view.org, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, She's the author of The Cosmic Hologram, Information at the Center of Creation. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Jude Kuravan, and she is the author of The Cosmic Hologram, Information at the Center of Creation. I want to mention, too, that she spells throughout the book and even in the title of the book, Information, I-N-formation at the Center of Creation, in formation. It really opens up that word, just like information. So we're talking about, when you say information, mm-hmm. you're talking about more than data. And I quote sure. you as saying, everything we call physical reality is literally made up of information. Mm-hmm. So I'd love for you to expand on that.
Okay, well, before the break, we talked about how ephemeral what we call physical reality is. You know, when we get down, we drill down to subatomic entities like electrons and quarks. They're not tiny billiard balls. They're actually incredible will-o'-the-wisp excitations in fields of energy. When information was starting to be needed to be understood, you know, the beginning of the computer age and the telecommunications age, what is information? And people started to look at it in a different way. Rather than just data, they started looking at it a different way. And they started to understand theoretically that information has physical properties. So, example, if you store one bit of information, it actually has work associated with it. It has temperature associated with it, which are physical attributes, yeah? So there were a number of theoretical physicists, people like Leo Szilard and Rolf Landauer, who got that information is physical, and they showed theoretically what that would mean. But the real key one was the understanding by IBM telecommunications expert Claude Shannon, who was trying to understand how much information you can squirt down a cable, yeah, because that had a lot of commercial importance. And he discovered that it equated to Ludwig Boltzmann's equation for the thermodynamic entropy of a gas, exactly the same information. But what's been more recently understood is instead of just the ability to contain information in terms of communications, as Vladko Vedral, who's the quantum physicist at Oxford, has understood, it's actually the informational content of a system. So instead of thinking of entropy as order and disorder, or even as microstates in a system, it's now being realized when we talk about the entropy of a system, it's its informational content.
Well, help us to understand the word entropy.
Right. So this is going to be a big word. It's going to be a big word in the next few years.
Okay, so that's why I want to slow it down a little bit for us.
Land
the word entropy.
Okay. Well, most folks who've studied science or engineering tend to consider entropy as something about the move from an order in a system to a disorder. So, for example, if I've got this glass of water and it's sitting on the edge of this table and it's sitting there, it's quite ordered, I then knock it over. The water goes everywhere, the glass breaks, it goes to disorder. But actually, that isn't quite what happens. It is, but at a deeper level, the number of microstates, the relationships between all the tiny states of water and glass when that glass is sitting on the table is at a level, and that level is its entropy sitting there. When I knock it over and it goes everywhere, think of all that water then interconnecting with the carpet, with the splashed on the walls. The number of microstates it exhibits is more.
So it becomes more complex.
It becomes more complex. So instead of thinking order to disorder, think simplicity to complexity. And think of simplicity to complexity as an increase in the informational content. Now, we're thinking of a glass in a room, but think of the whole universe as a closed system, okay? So our whole universe, when it began 13.8 billion years ago, we talk about the Big Bang. It wasn't big, wasn't a bang. It was tiny, but it was incredibly, it was as simple as it could be, but no simpler.
It was just a phrase that got caught on, huh?
Yeah. But and Fred Hoyle did it because he wanted to, he didn't believe in it, basically, and he just wanted to diss it. But it caught on. But what we now realize is that beginning was incredibly simple. It was incredibly fine-tuned. So instead of a big bang, it was a big breath as time flowed and space expanded. So what we had...
So it was like the glass, the water in the glass before it got... And then it kicked off the table.
But instead of some idiot like me kicking off the table, mm-hmm. our universe expanded in this incredibly interrelated, informed way so that the laws of physics, the instructions, if you like, of information that enable our universe to exist and evolve are so beautifully set up that our universe literally was able not just to exist, but literally to be able to evolve from that level of simplicity to ever greater complexity, ever greater informational content.
So the principles didn't change.
No.
But they became more complex.
They became more complex.
What happens when, and I think that we can feel this in our world today, that where the complexity reaches such a level that we would call it chaotic. There's no longer what we would call coherence.
Sure.
We can feel this politically and economically
Absolutely.
And socially
Absolutely.
And in our world today. So what does this all of this have to do with where we are now?
Well, think of our entire universe and maybe think of it as simply as we can do. It isn't quite the geometry, but think of it as a balloon. Okay. So right from that first moment of the big breath, 13.8 billion years ago, think of space expanding as the big breath, rather like blowing up a balloon, yeah? And time flows within space-time. So that's the whole beauty about entropy. It increases through time. So within what we call our space-time of our universe, time flows, space expands. What that means is that in every moment, and we can talk about the moment because we talk about the Planck scale. Every tiny moment, our universe has more informational content than the most moment before because it's a closed system. So we need to think of our entire universe.
Wait, say that again.
Our universe is a closed system. Think of it like a balloon. So the surface of the balloon is the edges of our universe. Yeah. So all that's within that balloon, all the energy matter, is information expressed as energy matter and conserved. But as the balloon expands, as time flows, our universe evolves ever greater complexity within it. So yesterday, our universe had less informational content than it has today, than it will have tomorrow through the whole of its cycle of life. But we're talking
because
about...
Because there are more connections happening, because there is more surface.
There's more... Think of it as the surface area of that balloon. And think of the surface area of the balloon. This is where black holes come into it. It was understood, because people were saying, well, okay, we have a star, we have a big star. That star comes to the end of its life. And then it doesn't all explode. It just shrinks inwards. And the power of its gravity is so great that it shrinks below what's called event horizon, where even light can't escape. And that's why it becomes a black hole. It looks black because no light's escaping from it. But the question was asked quite naturally, well, what happens to all that information that describes the star? And it was realized that actually it is held on the surface area of that event horizon. Now, that sounds weird, because if you think about it, if you've got this glass of water, right, go back to the glass of water again, that we'd think that the information within that glass is proportional to the volume of water or the volume of the glass. So if we increase the size of the glass and the volume of the water, the information increases proportionally to that three-dimensional volume. Well, that's not what happens with a black hole. If you've got a black hole, it's proportional to its surface area, okay? Which is like a hologram. Because in a hologram, what you do is you bathe an object in light. You have a beam of light, you spit it. One beam goes on, the other beam bathes that object in light, picks up all sorts of information about it, comes back, combines with the original beam, and what's created is a pattern of information about that glass, but it's on a two-dimensional surface.
We can't see a black hole. Light doesn't penetrate.
But it's still spherical. So if you were in a spaceship, you could actually go around the black hole because it's the shape of the star.
Okay.
It's just that it looks black because it's so powerfully gravitational that the light can't escape.
I'm just thinking about recently they've discovered, they've been able to see
neutron stars.
Neutron stars
merging.
Yeah, they actually physically recorded it in other
electronics. They picked up the gravitational waves, but they've also been able to pick up a visual of it. It's actually quite extraordinary.
And that is, an extraordinary event for us,
It's the hors d'oeuvre. This is the main course.
Okay, all right. Not to get distracted by it, huh?
This is the canapes.
Do not be distracted by it. Okay.
But it's extraordinary. But just to go back to this point about a hologram. So what happens then? All the information of a three-dimensional object is captured and then displayed on a two-dimensional surface. The hologram's created when then you shine another beam of light through it, and the appearance of that 3D object is created. That's the hologram. The point is that all the information of that appearance of 3D-ness of the hologram is held on the two-dimensional surface of information you've picked up.
But why is this important for us?
Because cosmologists think our entire universe is a hologram. So when we talk about the expansion of space, first of all, what we're saying is when people go back to black holes for a second, trying to understand what happened to all of the information of that star, realizing that it was actually all held on that two-dimensional surface of the black hole. So it increased not proportionally to the volume of the black hole, but to the surface area of it, exactly like a hologram. They expanded that understanding to our whole universe and basically said that our whole universe is essentially a giant cosmic hologram. What they also realized is what level of information is held on the surface area of a black hole. And a brilliant Israeli physicist called Jacob Bekenstein mathematically proved that if you think of the surface area of a black hole covered in tiny little triangles, yeah? So the entire surface area is covered in these minute triangles. And there's one digital bit of information held within each of those triangles. That measures the informational content of the black hole. So if we think about boundary of space with these tiny triangular areas, with each one holding one digitized bit of information about the whole universe, then as space expands, that this is what we call the pixelation of space-time.
Okay, I'm here with Dr. Jude Caravan, and she is the author of The Cosmic Hologram, Information at the Center of Creation. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available.